Ahoy, everybody. Welcome back to another Sack Manager. This is episode 98. I'm John.
And I'm John.
Now, you want to enlighten us with, as per the protocols, what you have named episode 98?
Oh, like the suggestion that I sort of gave you is okay to pronounce it as the official title?
Well, you do that.
All right. Well, I think I named it Get Your VAR Tattoo Now.
One of those ones that you get in the $1 box of chocolates or something, or the chewing gum.
Well, you know what? The thing is, though, if you do add the VAR tattoo on your arm, it might be that micromillimeter that actually touches the ball and ends up as a handball. So beware.
Beware indeed. Indeed. Okay, so on the weekend, Manchester City. Now, I just want to, obviously the game's done and dusted, a 2-2 draw.
Fair result.
Yeah. Well, hey, you didn't have the guts to predict. You thought the side wouldn't be any good. You thought that the side would lose and lose quite badly.
Yes.
I said that we would have a scoring draw of 2-2.
Did you?
Yeah, too right.
Well done.
Too right, I did.
So I'm
the one.
You didn't come back from England, huh? Because you look like you're wearing a VAR referee sort of top there. You weren't pressing the buttons, were you?
VAR. Could have been.
Handball.
Yeah, so lots and lots to talk about in this particular game. I guess, where do you sort of start with this sort of one? Maybe we'll just start off, if you want to just give us a little bit about how you saw the game, and then we can go into,
all right,
I guess, little discussion points as we go.
Yeah. All right, well, look, we ended up getting a point, as you continually tell me I was wrong.
Yes, you were.
Look, really, we were, except for the last 10 minutes where basically City looked tired, they were hammering us throughout the game. They were putting a lot of pressure on us. They weren't giving us space. And they were really defending high up. So the minute we got the ball in defence, they were putting pressure on us. And we were really under the pump from there. You know, so we didn't have a lot of space to pass the ball around, to do anything. And our aspect of our defending was to sort of shore up the middle of the park and allow them to attack on the wings. And they did that through Sterling, who was quite deep and wide, so basically, which was troublesome for Walker Peters, because he
Walker
had to...
Peters.
What did I say? Walker Peters.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I don't know what you're laughing.
Lost the plot.
Okay. I think my pronunciation wasn't a good one. But okay, so and then part of that as well was that our line of defensive midfielders didn't support him enough as they should have. I think there was if someone like Sterling was going to be that deep and wide, then someone like whoever's on that, whether it was Sissoko, whoever, should have supported him on that wing. So they were really attacking that wing, and also the other wing too with Rose. So he had a bit of trouble there. And once again, we needed to support him. And so Van Braun, or whatever his name was, had a very good game on that side too, flicking in those... Who's their Belgium guy?
What are you talking about?
So who's their Belgian guy?
For City?
Yeah.
Oh, I can't remember. Yeah.
Van Bruyne or something.
Yeah.
Van Bruyne, anyway.
Oh, De Bruyne.
De Bruyne,
yeah,
thank you.
Yeah, sorry.
Jesus, the 15 countries there. yeah, don't worry about me. So, really, they just had us under the pump, and we found it difficult to go forward, and at times very difficult to defend them. You know, they had quite a few chances, and it was only sort of some of their waywardness or our desperation that stopped the ball. And there were times where basically anyone was helping everyone. Like, I think for me, one of the highlights of the first half, and you probably won't agree, that I liked Lamella's running within that game. He played, he sort of played deep. There was a moment in the early part where KWP, there you go, I won't say his name anymore, Carl Walker Peters, we're just giggling away like schoolgirls. Where basically Lamella went deep to end the win the ball off Sterling and help in that wing. Another one basically was Sissoko. He was strong and got into good positions.
This is a sort of game that suits him, doesn't it? You know, the real sort of...
The rear gun action, the
scrap.
Yeah. Luckily for us, he wasn't as aggressive in some, like in some of those practice games where he was just running through people. He sort of played well. And also, he one of the few people, players rather, who... went forward, you know, sort of carried the ball forward and so forth on that wing. And I think the few times that we did attack, it was on that wing with him, or rather, and also Kyle Walker-Peters, who was basically busting forward.
Well, did you see at some point that he was even playing like right back at one stage?
Yeah. Anything to... Yeah. Well, in a way, he had to do that to cover those wings. And I think... The two goals that were scored, we didn't defend as well. We should have, and we didn't support. I think with their first goal, we might as well talk about that.
Yeah.
20 minutes in or whatever it was. If you watch the replay, Sterling was quite deep and wide, almost in a way to so we wouldn't remember he was on the pitch or something.
Yeah.
But the way they played, he sort of cut in from that position and got really right up to the goal. And... A nice goal it was from that sort of almost semi-tight angle, but no one tracked him, and that was my issue with the two wings, that someone from the defensive midfield, someone had to track him, and no one did. No one was given that job, or they were too busy covering the centre of it, so they didn't really want to, you know, so they had to... And the thing is, with City, they're very good crossers as opposed to us. They could really get the ball in there.
Yeah, like I said last week, it's the one part of our game over, I would say, probably the last 10 or 15 years. You haven't really had a person that can really belt down the wing. Like, if you think about the right-backs that we've had, like, Aaron Lennon could get past, you know, and, you know, the little, two little legs going a million miles an hour. But Kitty Cross, no.
No. Townsend.
Not as good. And even Kyle Walker in recent years, you know, before he went to City. Just the inability to get to that point and cross it in, you know.
The one guy I thought today from our corners who crossed the ball really well and into danger areas in their box was Lamella.
He did supply the cross for the second goal as well.
Yeah, but I think some of the crosses that he put it in there in a dangerous position. I think he's got a very good left foot. He wouldn't have taken it from the other side, but from their other side, from where his crossing was very good today.
There are certain people that would say that when I was first watching the goal with certain people, I'm saying. like for me... Sterling probably represents... Would he go close, would you say, the best player in the league?
No.
Well, I would say that he would be very close to it. I just think that there's not many players that can keep up with him. And the one thing with Walker-Peters is that there were a few times where he was able to sort of match him. To sort of hold him back. But you can't contain... everything. Where's you know, he can't do it all like some defenders can. So what I mean by that is that with a guy like Sterling, you know, you've got to have the pace to be able to keep up with him.
Yes.
And then there's, as you said, or as you accurately described, you can sort of just hold him in that position. But when he starts to cut in all of a sudden, that's where, you know, you can't, it just can't be defended. And if you go too close, he just goes right around you.
Exactly.
And the way
he played when he was deep, Kyle Walker-Peters could really be hanging around 30 metres away from the goals just to hold on to Sterling.
Yeah.
So
I actually thought, and I mean, unless you think that maybe Lloris could have done a better job, I don't think that was a really savable goal. You know, when you look at everything, I understand the tracking sort of bit of it, but I just don't think that we've got anybody in our team that can perform the tracking, especially when...
Well, I think Sissoko was on that on there, but there was no way he was going to catch up with Sterling unless he was playing deeper than what he was. So, you know what? It was a clever move because, A, he was so wide, he was almost ineffectual and out of the game. But when the ball was going forward, then he started his run and cut in and moved and got really deep very quickly. He's a very fast runner. And I think as well, people used to mock him, but now he's matured into an excellent player and an excellent striker. You know what I mean? It took a few years. There were times where people were like, when he left
Liverpool. Do you remember that Liverpool show that was on TV? That was like the pre-season of Liverpool. It was like a 6-part series.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And one of the things, where this is when he was very young and, you know, probably just about ready to hit his hit his first real season as a starter at Liverpool. And Brendan Rodgers sort of pulled him aside and goes, if you're not going to, you know, do that, you can bloody well get off the pitch and all of that sort of thing. So when you talk about maturity and being ready as a striker, I just think that there's no better attacker right now than him. I mean, he's one of these guys. He reminds me a little bit of Bale in a way that he just thinks that he can force the issue. That he can just, if he thinks that running at someone and just doing it all himself, he's the sort of guy that sort of represents that, you know. Shooting ability, both feet, obviously the heading ability. Isn't quite to, you know, what you'd think of Bale, but, you know, you have a look at the... You know, I mean, he headed that right over past Lloris to the point where, for my mind, Lloris never had a chance.
It was interesting because you would think, oh, maybe Lloris had a chance because it was such a...
It wasn't like a looping in one. Like, it was a pretty straight line.
It was straightforward, but especially from that angle, you thought, but no, I think he timed it well.
I think the camera angle disguises it. I think the ball's already past him.
Could be.
Yeah. You know, sometimes when you see it from a different angle, see it behind, and you see the same thing, and you go, oh, I thought it was like getting ready to do it.
Exactly.
But the ball was already way past him. And if you look at it from the back and you think of a ball coming straight at you, even though it's on a sort of angle, you can see that the ball is beginning to move or whatever, and the keeper's got no chance because it's already past him.
So they hit us with that, and in a way, did you watch it live?
No.
Okay. So I think if you watched it live, it would have been, uh-oh, you know, here comes an avalanche.
Well, when I watched it, I didn't know the score.
Okay. So, in a way...
I was thinking, oh, God.
Here we go.
You know.
Yeah.
And I just thought, you know, but, you know, because it's so early in the season, yeah, if it was like in March or April, towards the end of the season, I'd go, you know what, I'm not putting up with this. And then you go, start, this is when you start to fast forward a little bit. And then when you see that there's a goal, you go, oh, hang on, let me go back.
So that was, and I think that was a feeling with probably a lot of people. And then I think it was Lamella with his bustling style cut into the middle.
How did that eventuate? Because, I mean, all I remember was all of a sudden that it just came from out of nowhere. It was almost like, was there a steal and then maybe he got fed through by Ericsson, maybe?
Well, I think what Spurs saw was that the City keeper almost played as a sweeper. He was so high off his line that whenever the ball was sort of coming down, it was almost up there with the defenders, you know, an extra person. And obviously that's how Pep wants them to play. And I think when we got the break and Lamella sort of bustled into that centre bit just outside the box, he would have realised, or he probably saw, that the keeper wasn't on the line. The keeper was about 15 yards off the line. So that means that basically with Lamella seeing that, he could hit it, you know, hit it sort of closer to him, because and curl it across. So there was a bit of a curl at the end, but if he was on the line, he would have more more time to see the shot.
Once again, there was one angle that you saw where you thought, oh, is there been a deflection? But there wasn't a deflection. No, yeah, no. It was just pretty much straight through.
Yeah, he basically hit it, and then the ball, as usual, these modern balls, you know, curl a bit and turn. So, but he didn't hit it towards the corner where he would have if the keeper was on the line, because the keeper then, that extra half a second, could dive. And the keeper wasn't going to dive in the middle of where he was.
Correct.
And that was a problem with their defence, but basically. And then I think we saw later on Harry Kane try to chip him from about 80 yards or something. So there's that, you know, it sort of gives you an inkling of what's possible to beat them if they're risking a keeper playing almost as a third centre back, the way how high plays. So with someone like Harry Kewell, maybe in the return game in London, that something like that. I tell you what, if Harry Kane, because he was behind the halfway line, if he was around the halfway line, it would have been more accurate, and he would have hit it much harder, and the distance he might have scored from the halfway line because of the way they play.
Yeah.
But at least doing that scared him a bit, and sort of going, "You got to stay back, mate, or else we're going to hit you like this." So, look, the 1-1, and they were shocked. Because it was now like our first shot at goal or something like that, or on target. And really, Lamela was the aspect of part of his game that Pochettino has developed is almost the a defensive aspect of it, where he is coming from Argentina. There are certain aspects of gamesmanship that maybe he has, but also he's taught himself to do the hard yards, the defensive legwork, you know. That bit where he saved Kyle Walker-Peters in the first 5 minutes, sort of running around trying to stop Man City playing, and then getting that lovely goal. And it was a goal. Like, it was clever. And you also have to admit, I know you're not the biggest fan, but to hit it the way he did and to see where, and to sort of judge where the keeper was, and to hit it where basically it didn't go in the corner, it went sort of probably 3 yards away from the corner, that he knew what the keeper couldn't dive for it and all that kind of stuff. That it was a clever goal, and that I think it was his first goal for a while. And
I think the commentator said it was maybe like 16 months, yeah, or something. Yeah, at least in the Premier League. And we know that he scored in some of the cup competitions.
Yeah, yeah,
and so forth. So,
and so yeah, but even after that, they continued to basically press ahead and attack.
Just on that, I'm just having a look at some of the stats, and this sort of skew-ifs a little bit. It says 30 shots to 3.
Yeah.
Given that we had 3 of those shots for goals. We had 8 saves. The keeper didn't have to make a save, obviously, those 2 goals. But the impressive thing for me was the possession. 55% to 45. Now, 45, I thought, flattered us. It just seems like we were defending a little bit more than what we actually did have possession. Yeah. Do you think that there's been a shift, whether it be for this game or even when you look at the first half of the last game, where, you know, Poch has maybe tried to make us into a little bit more of a continental side? By that, I know you're laughing at me.
I know, I was thinking continental cup of soup. Yeah.
but you know, like you soak, yeah, it, you soak up the pressure. You know, all the good sides over the last, you know, 20, 25, especially the Italian sides, have that ability to just soak up the pressure, nullify everything, kill the game. Then all of a sudden you start dictating, and then you're just, counter-attacking. Do you reckon that there's been some sort of shift, or can you see any shift that has been obvious from last year to going into this year?
Well, the formation that he started with in both games, he changed it in the second half against Villa, right, but continued with it in the City game, where basically he's played 4 defenders and 3 defensive midfielders.
Almost like a 4-3-1, 4-3-2-1,
yeah,
yeah, like the old Christmas tree.
Yeah, and I don't think it's worked. yet.
Or does it need time?
Well, but the whole point, especially against Man City, was that if they were attacking and successfully attacking down the wings, then you need to cover that. And so I don't think he's got defensive midfielders who are quick. Sissoko isn't quick, and Sissoko should have looked after Sterling a bit more in that first half especially. And with De Bruyne, whatever. On the other side, how many times did he cross the ball? How many times did he have it so easy? That was a job for the other, whoever was on that side, to look after him and put more pressure. And that didn't happen. So if he's looking at something like that, those two defensive midfielders have to support and almost be a front cover for the left and right back.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times they were left exposed, and the second goal was from that as well, where Aguero scored a tap in. So there's that problem. And my problem with that is that we need now to refresh the defensive line. So all this talk about the Tongan, etc., Pochettino's probably thinking, I need to put a young guy in here. And that's why Sanchez is in there besides Vertonghen. Whether there's an injury or what other issues, he needs Sanchez to develop and grow and be a better defender much quicker. We know what Vertonghen and so forth can do, but Vertonghen is probably 32 or 33.
Do you think Sanchez is going to make it?
I don't know.
There's a part of me that says, you know, like, were we very lucky to have Vertonghen and Toby?
Well, they were much older when they came to Spurs. I think Sanchez was 22 last year or something like that. Is he 20? Whatever. Yeah. He's not at that 25-year stage. But then that also means that you got to play him to gain that experience. So when he hits 25, he is that player that you want him to be, and then he'll be that player for the next 5 years. And if that's what, I don't know what Pochettino is thinking, but if that's the case, then he has to play. Make whatever he makes. And I don't think he played badly. And he's also much quicker than Vertonghen as well. So maybe that's why he needed his pace. But if it's not working with him, then we need to look at someone who's a better defender than him and get him in. Whether it means January, and then because that's one of the things I thought we'll do this time, we would get some fresh defensive players in.
Well, that clearly hasn't happened.
No, and the success that we had when we finished second was because after his first season, he wanted to fix his defence. So his key was getting Toby and getting, you know, strengthening that defensive line. And then when we did finish second, we weren't even conceding a goal every two games or whatever. It was a great defensive lineup, and he built from that, and then he built his midfield, and then he was lucky he had Harry Kane as a striker. But I don't know, that's not happening at the moment. So I was waiting for something this summer to say, here's a player or two. Maybe he's relying on Sanchez and Foyth. Maybe he sees something in Foyth that maybe hasn't appeared yet.
Well, the rest of us haven't seen, yeah.
You know what I mean? So maybe he says, well, in training he sees something in them that we don't see at the moment. But that's also because they're young and growing into the actual role itself. So there might be something there.
But is it a mistake to not play Vertonghen and Toby? Like if that is your tried and tested matchup, understand that you've got to get games into Sanchez, but you know, should you be starting with your on paper, and I say on paper because Sanchez is still learning, but on paper, yes, that's
we did comedy as well.
But on paper, should you not just
he the best though at the moment? I think at the pace that City had, we might have been in trouble. You know, if Vertonghen was there, because they might have said, okay, he can't turn around fast enough. So maybe Pochettino feared that someone would just basically pass the ball past him and just run on. You know what I mean?
Because there's no big Benteke's or Kane's or, you know, those real big well, whether it's beast mode or whether it's like by height.
But I think Vertonghen and reads the game better than Sanchez and gets into better position. But I think his age and perhaps his speed might let him down now. And there's other guys who were like, hey, you know what? It's basically Pochettino is playing, is at the moment basically progressing and building the second phase of this, of his sides, of his team. So I think with these new players that have come in, and then there'll be more players next season, well, that's basically refreshing and maybe also redoing that side. So probably in 2 years' time, there will be very few of these players currently in that side. They'll be in that side.
Yeah, interesting. Interesting. Have we talked about Moura's goal?
Well, let's talk about that because that was an incredible piece of goal scoring. And
it was a masterstroke to bring him on.
Well, it was a lot of things. And it was a strange, almost soap opera kind of situation because...
That's another thing I had written down. Do you think that, you know, even though we didn't beat them, but do you think that they're sort of our bunny? Well, could you say that there is an element there that they have more problems with us than most sides? Given that Guardiola in the lead up to the game did an interview where he claimed that Spurs were the second best team in Europe.
I only said that because we finished runners up in the Champions League. I wouldn't.
Yeah, but I don't think he's thinking that he's not referencing Liverpool.
Well,
or you think he's referencing Liverpool?
Yeah.
I'm not used to it. Because that's one of the... I'm not used to an honest coach. But
I don't think it's honest. I think it's just him.
Diverting the pressure.
I don't think he believes that.
Yeah. Well, I actually do sort of think that
I'm beginning not to like him, to tell you the truth.
Yeah.
I really just... A
bit prickly for your liking?
It's more like he's over-the-top stuff that he does in front of everyone, you know? For instance, let's talk about the Moura goal. So Moura's coming on. He's running on. And on, as he's coming on, you see a frenetic... you see Pep shouting at Aguero, I think it is, to cover him. You know, and it's kind of like, he's your striker. Why would he cover him?
Yeah.
You've got all these other players that have got more defensive ability than him.
Yeah, but he must be thinking about, you know, height and speed, that he's a good matchup.
Well... That would have been proved totally wrong.
I totally agree.
So from that moment, but you know what I mean? These histrionics that you see on the bench.
Histrionics?
Histrionics. It's a lovely word.
Yeah.
I've been using that for a few years. You see on the bench from him, it's almost like a new version of Mourinho in a way. You know what I mean? But Mourinho did it. I think everything he did was deliberate in public, okay? Pep, I don't know, does he think, well, I need to be in this show? You know what I mean? I don't know. I'm just getting a bit tired of him shouting and screaming and this. It's like when they won the... Was it when they won the FA Cup? And he's sitting there with Sterling trying to explain something that happened in there. It's like, can you just enjoy it?
Yeah.
If you're a bit like that, go to the dressing room and just leave the team to enjoy a moment. Yeah. It's not like they're playing next week. And I'm just getting a bit tired of that stuff.
Well, he's a different coach to your average English manager. You're like your Sean Dyches and all that sort of thing. That would, after a good game, you'd give the side, the Monday off or whatever. This is a manager that is a personality, and probably believes himself to be bigger than the team itself.
Well, there is definitely an ego there. And I read something somewhere, I can't remember, where basically, was it Ibrahimovic or someone like that was talking about him and basically said, he's not this people person that people think he is.
Yeah.
And he it's all about him, really. Like, he wouldn't accommodate Ibrahimovic in the side, or he wouldn't talk to him after he dropped him and stuff.
There's
like
no
that.
Doubt that after, and I'm sure you'll get into this, but, you know, the skirmish that happened afterwards when he pulled off Aguero, that he can make or break your career at City. So there is also that power trip mentality.
Definitely.
If you're not on board with my way of doing things, whereas, you know, with Poch, it's a little bit more of a man on man. It's a little bit more personable.
And I think Pochettino uses that so his players play for him. You know, they have that bond, and which is why, if you saw last season, when we were a few minutes here or there from being knocked out from each round of the Champions League, that this team dug deeper and, you know, and got through. And is that mentality, if you saw him when he ran into the dressing rooms cosplaying big boss, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You could see what he wants. He wants, you know, the never say die attitude, that, you know, we're going to do anything it takes to get through. And also, he's got a rivalry with Pep, because they basically coaching Espanyol are in Barcelona.
Yes.
So, you know, Espanyol, obviously, by their name, is more like call themselves Spanish as opposed to Catalan. Anyway, let's go back to their goal. So I think, so while he was shouting at someone to cover him, Moura came on. Lamela was waiting at the corner. The assistant referee was blocking him until the referee was ready. The cross came in. He out-jumped Walker, who's probably like 7 feet taller than him, and scored a magnificent goal.
It's a great header.
That was fantastic, because he would have to stretch every millimeter of his body to get that high.
Especially, you know, those little neck muscles.
Yeah. And then not only that, at the same time to try and head the ball backwards and to keep it down, because it's so easy sort of to hit at the top of your bonce and then that to fly out. That it was a magnificent goal. And then we definitely celebrated that one. That was a special moment. 18 seconds, or probably even less. By the moment he stopped, he ran to the corner and stopped. And then there was 3 or 4 seconds until the assistant referee got out of the way. We're talking 5-10 seconds, really.
Yeah.
You know? That was fantastic. So that basically made it 2-2. And they kept at us, but I think they were losing some of their creativity. I think they were getting tired.
Yeah.
I think they'd hit us.
And I think they were getting desperate as well. Like, that's what happens during, you know, I mentioned before about Sterling wanting to really, you know, a bit like Bale, you know, you want to push it, you know, like you're the man, you push it and you shoot on sight and you take plays on. But, you know, there comes a time where, you know, whereas you could have been doing that at the very beginning, at the end of the game, it's not quite the same.
Well, you're right. And there were so many chances where they went forward, but they lost the ball a lot.
True.
Do you remember that? So the last 10 minutes, you could tell they were tired, or they weren't. They were probably exhausted. They were also mentally exhausted because they tried to finish us off and they couldn't find that goal. And they were just giving the ball away. And then, even though I knew the score, it was kind of like, oh, there were certain moments where we could have stole it, but it wasn't to be. Did you see that goal kick formation? Where that was a strange thing, where Lloris was going to take the goal kick, two defenders inside the box, and then two just outside the box, am I right, or one or two?
Mm.
What is that? I've never seen that before. Have you?
It was. I was watching something on one of the television shows, and to be honest, it could have been Sherwood. I'm probably taking things off.
East End Geezer.
Yeah. But it's got something to do with eliminating off, you know, or trying to eliminate the offside from the attacking point of view, like when you're playing that deep.
I don't know. I
can't quite explain it, but yeah, because he had, maybe Andy Townsend, yeah.
Because he had two players inside the box. Now, is the rule change where they can receive the ball? I thought you couldn't touch the ball until the ball came out of the box. That's how I remember it. The goalkeeper, whoever was taking the kick, no one else could touch the ball until it left
the
penalty box. Because that's how I played.
Yeah.
And that was aeons ago. But it was weird. I hadn't seen that before, so I'm not too sure what the logic is behind it.
Yeah, okay.
Maybe it's a way to drag some City players forward to cover it.
Maybe.
I don't know. Anyway, that was a bit strange. And then, obviously, the Aguero got subbed with 25 minutes ago and had the nice little argument on the pitch. Or just near the, you know. And that's the things that get to me.
Yeah.
Why couldn't Pep just leave him alone? He's angry. He's not happy. Why do you have to go for it and talk to him and yell at him? You know what I mean? It's kind of like, why? You could have just let him go. He could have basically was, obviously he was annoyed at being subbed. And then he went and sat down, just leave him alone.
Sometimes, you know, I think it's Pep wanting to prove everybody who's boss. But not only to the players, but to the people, the millions that are watching that.
Yeah.
I think there is a little bit to that.
I think it's a bit over the top.
Yes,
I agree. And maybe it's something that he's grown into or basically he sort of started to use. I don't remember when he was at Barcelona when he first started doing this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a bit Richard III, arch evil person sort of, you know what I mean? Just like pantomime in a way, maybe, yeah. I should use that word. And they're like, really? Do we need this? Look at Pochettino. Don't forget Pochettino coached in Spain. Also, he's Argentinian. So, you know, there's that sort of hot-headedness that we sometimes, you know, relate to Argentina and their players. But he was calm. He was fine. You know what I mean? There's a classiness to Pochettino as a person. In totally different to Guardiola, who his players play a classy football. He's not particularly, I don't know, a classy person. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Yeah. I think Pochettino has certain moral standards that he upholds and expects his teams.
Well, that's what we were talking about before, about that, you know, that being a little bit more personable.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think, yeah, for him, definitely he has that approach. And and then basically, one of our newer players, you tell me how it's
called.
I can't even say my surname.
Lo Celso.
Yeah, you know what? The thing about him that surprised me, when I was watching footage of him in Spain, he looked like a big bloke, big, strong. And then he was shown to the Spurs crowd with the Fulham, ex-Fulham right. Left back? I think left back.
Sessegnon.
Thank you. You're doing really well. I'm going to leave them all to you.
Well, I know the players. It's not my fault you don't.
Yes. I'm sorry. My lack of knowledge brings us down. And he's not that big, is he? And then when he came on, he goes, I thought you were a 6'6 kind of guy. He's like a 6 maybe, a 6 foot.
I think sometimes it's the shirts as well.
You think?
Yeah, because
you look quite short.
Yeah.
Not short, but yeah. I'm expecting this huge, robust, you know, shoulders guy.
Yeah, I know, yeah. I think, you know, because the shirt's a little bit bigger and everything like that, a little bit not as tight.
Yeah.
You know, this seems to be the thing with our tops, that they seem to be figure-hugging and...
Yeah. So it was good to see, even though nothing sort of... There wasn't much done by him, but just chasing. But it was good to see him.
Well, just to get on the pitch, just get a feel for it, and then
maybe
in the next couple of weeks we start to
slowly
see him being integrated.
I want to, because what we need is, I suppose, options sometimes that like you've said in the past, that our bench is an issue where we don't have that many options coming on. But, and don't forget, there's players like Dele Alli who are injured as well. So there's Sun who's coming back. So there's those options that we haven't had and will appear once again.
Well, Son will be back for this next game against Newcastle.
And it'll be interesting to see, I suppose, with that, what happens to Lamella. Because I think he's had a very good pre-season, from my point of view. He's played the games.
Well, there's no doubt he deserves to be in the side.
Maybe.
I'm probably one of his most harshest critics.
You are indeed. The most harshest
critic.
Yes.
But there's no doubt that he has...
He plays different.
He's just never really reached what we've expected.
I think he was a very attacking player in Italy. He scored a lot of goals from midfield. And I think when he came over, we didn't get that. What we got now is a good, robust sort of team player. He's not, I think, an individualist. Mm. There's the odd occasion, of course, but... He's more a team player now, so...
Yeah. I'm looking at the side in front of me, and you would say, okay, you know, I didn't think Harry Winks had the best of...
I didn't mind Winksy.
We were under pressure a lot.
And don't forget our other French player, our new French player. What's his name?
Ndombele.
Thank you. He had a pretty quiet game too.
Yeah, correct.
Eriksen, invisible. Most of the time.
Yes. Yeah.
Even though he was really, I was watching the preview, and they were really saying, well, he made the difference in the Villa game. And I think they forget to notice that basically we changed our formation as well. He did have a good game coming in deep.
Yeah, but I was a big rat for him last week. I wasn't a huge rat for him.
He was back to himself, I think.
I just think when you're thinking about where does a guy like Lo Celso or Moura sort of fit in? It's that probably not so much Moura, but for Lo Celso, the Eriksen position, especially with the news that. That seems to be reported in the last 24 hours is that there's less than 2 weeks now of the
That's
window,
right.
And Real Madrid are looking to. This is really weird. They're willing to put 60 million. Yeah, 60 million. Jesus, I'd take that. Given the position that you're in. So this is the mind games. Real Madrid, if they're
waiting, I think they need to put in a bit more.
Yeah,
we've sold enough players to them.
Yeah. What about all these? Partnerships that we've had in the past.
I know.
Like the Bale. We've developed this exclusive partnership with Real Madrid.
Yeah, so we sell our best.
We never saw anything apart from Bale going in the opposite direction.
So we basically sell our best players.
And all of their players over the years. Remember, I can't think of the name, but over the years there's been two or three of their, hanger-on sort of players who have said, I'm not bloody going to Spurs.
Well, exactly. So.
But the whole thing is that they're looking to get Neymar in, and there's talk there that they're prepared to even do a package deal like cash plus Modric for Neymar. I think, are you crazy? Having said that, how old is Modric?
Modric is mid-30s, isn't he? Well, so we're talking 2 years.
Maybe they're prepared now to sort of say, hey, we need to keep things moving along. We can't stay stagnant.
Well, I would tell you the truth.
You'd think that there'd be some bank on this planet that would loan, that'd be stupid enough to loan Real Madrid another 100 million euros to just go.
I don't know. I think we've discussed this before. And you know what they do? They get their money from Spanish banks. Because they know no Spanish bank will basically start
ignore
to,
them.
Or basically say, okay, it's time to pay up.
Yeah.
because they'll probably get decimated by the fans, you know, and riots in
just
the streets.
Just pay the most limited amount.
Yeah.
I mean, well, it's incredible to look at their books.
Yeah, oh, I'd so many zeros or in the red. The thing is, would you do it? Because, A, we can't get Modric as a player, but maybe I don't know whether we can loan players. Remember, I don't know whether that's allowed.
Only if they're out of contract.
Oh, okay. He's not over. So they'd have to wait
a year. So, that's the whole thing with Llorente, that if he decided he was going to come back, for example, because there's that offer that's still on the table, yeah. Because he is technically, you know, without a club, I'll have to check that out, actually. Because he's not with a club, that he is able to sign for example, another Premier League side.
Okay. Well, look, I don't know if Eriksen is going, then basically I would say cash. There's no point waiting for Modric next year when he's 36 or 37.
Yeah.
And so no, I'll be talking cash in a brown suitcase with unmarked bills.
Yes.
Euros.
No coins.
No, can you imagine? Alfie's type of suitcase. Anyway. And okay, so we're nearing the end. And once again, Manchester City thought they beat us.
Yeah.
But what happened?
VAR. My Lord. VAR.
It's incredible that, you know what, looking at, it looks like, you know, you were talking about maybe we've got some kind of hoodoo or something against them. But don't forget, I think they beat us in the last three league games.
Oh, there's no doubt we've come a long way. I mean, remember the days in like 2013, 14 when, yeah, we were conceding like in, you know, 30, you know, within the first 30 seconds, you know, to unbelievable strikes.
And, well, like the Champions League.
Yeah.
No, but I'm saying, I think it's more a psychological thing where the VAR in the quarterfinal of the Champions League and on the weekend basically have ballooned the actual our hoodoo. Or, you know what I mean? It feels like they can't beat us or the world or UEFA won't let them. But the reality is as well, they've beaten us by the odd goal here or there in the league. It's just that these things have become so huge in the mythology of these two teams now is that they forget that, oh, they tend to beat us more often than not, you know. Mm. But, yes, once again, and did you – I was looking at the replay because everyone – Spurs thought, okay, we got done and so forth. And did you think the ball sort of touched the arm with a bit of – power? Because I was looking at it and I'm thinking, did it touch it? It was barely a touch, if at all. What did you think when they were showing the replays?
Don't know when, because I thought to myself, because Skip was on and Skip was basically tracking him, but was below. And I just, when I first saw it, I just thought, I want to see what, you know, like how far away he was. And then as they go closer and closer, you could actually see. I mean, that is hit right fair square. There was no glance. You know, it was just that, you know, in previous years, the technology and the camera angles just weren't always out there. Now I actually think there's even more cameras that seem to be there to be able to give best possible.
Yeah, especially in the Premier League.
Yes, yes. Yeah, and that's where I guess, you know, where VAR can exist so well in the Premier League and not so well in other leagues because of the cost of the technology to be able to do this. But we're talking about the most profitable league, the most watched league.
Definitely.
Yeah, this is the one that needs to set the standards. And I, for one, am glad. And I know that we're going to have some that go against us We may already have had one from last year. I can't remember. No. It just
Who knows?
Seems to ring a bell that we've, that one's gone against us. But yeah, I... Yeah, it's the age-old argument, isn't it? You know, do you, you know, do you have the VAR, you know, disrupting the flow of play and picking out like little handballs that are technically there, you know, versus, you know, the bar brawls at the end of the game, you know, when you're at the pub and you're not agreeing on things. The whole idea, and I don't know if I'm going off topic from your original question, but the whole idea of VAR, isn't it, is to get the correct decision.
Theoretically, the
correct decision's been made. This was a great call.
And I think as well that the rule was changed, and I think we talked about this last season, where they changed the rules, so there isn't that interpretation of accidental. If it touches your arm, it's handball. Doesn't matter whether you meant it or not. So obviously it's accidental because they were just running. He didn't sort of stick his arm out deliberately. But then there have been so many games in the past where they've done it deliberately and the referee has waved it on. But if it touches the arm, that's it. No ifs or buts, you can't. You know, there's the rule now. That's how it's happening. And you can't complain. Even though City were dumbfounded. Actually, both teams were dumbfounded about what the hell was going on there. Someone reviewed it and picked it up like they should have. So by the new process, it went how it should.
Yeah.
So the funny thing is, and to me the annoying thing was that where the commentators after the game said, oh, no, I don't like it, I don't like it. And it's like...
Oh, there's Sherwood.
Yeah,
So Sherwood's come out and said, you know, I know that it's got, you know, that we've got the correct decision, but I just don't like it. I just don't like it. Grow up, mate.
You know the worst part? The worst part, it's always been the media and Sky Sports and all those that have been pushing for this. So they basically highlight those moments where this could have changed the game sort of situation. And then the media has been the one that's been pushing VAR. It hasn't been the players. You know, the odd maybe manager has sort of said, oh, you know, they've been ripped off. But overall, it's the media because, A, it's part of the drama of watching football on TV.
Correct.
And that adds to it. So people say, oh, no, it wrecks it. It doesn't wreck it. It adds to the tension. And I think at the World Cup, the Euros, where there was that moment, there was tension. Is it going to be a goal? And that gave the TV companies a chance to replay and replay the moment. You know what I mean? To add to the tension. So for them, and one of their lackeys on TV to say, no, cronies. I don't, crony, thank you, to say, I don't like it. Well, you are the guys that have been pushing for it. Now you don't like it, it's bad luck. This is what you've ended up with. And whether you know, it's football or whoever, this is what we've got now in this league and this is how it's going to stay, and they'll probably even get more technical. They'll probably be able to, you know, have body suits in the future where, you know what I mean? They could sort of tell how far you are from the ball and so forth. It is what it is now. Whether, you know, I'm a bit disappointed we've got this far, but it is what it is now. If you don't like it, you can walk away or you just put up with it and then, you know what I mean? And it will only get better. Yep. The more experienced these officials in Heathrow Airport or wherever, it kind of reminds me of like Major League Baseball where there's a decision and then they're all waiting for the call for, or, you know, from New York or whatever. What's going on, you know? And
just on that, I know exactly where it is.
Do you? Have you been?
Yeah. If you go to they got the, I think it's the Chelsea Markets, and you sort of go in, it's a little bit, you know, sort of hipster and all that
thing. Yeah.
And you go in there, you get your cheeses and your delis and all that sort of thing. And there's a lift on your right-hand side, and it's got the Major League Baseball.
Ah.
So that is where it all happens.
And there you go. Yeah. So that's where they... But so they must have... How many people are there? Because it's kind of like 15 games, say, going on at the same time. Not accurate, but, you know, there could be one Sunday where they're all... we're not even talking football now. But what do you wait for instant? Then you run into the booth and then check all the TVs, because it takes forever in the baseball, doesn't
you,
it?
Well, are you talking baseball? It
doesn't take that much time anymore in the football.
Yeah.
But in the baseball, it takes forever. You're there for 5-10 minutes.
Yeah.
Anyway, just let's get back to the sport we're talking about.
Look, I think that you remember we had that FA Cup game a couple of years ago when it took 10 or 12 minutes for the right decision to come past. I mean, everyone was having a knock on it. I think that's just the evolution of it. You know, that was your first time. What, you know, does everything that you don't, that you try the first time,
you can't
time
be an
work?
Expert straight away,
Exactly. So that was just the blunder that you had to have.
Yeah.
I think nowadays when you see, you know, there's not that much time, you know, and... You know, you think about, you know, players rolling around and you know, especially in the South American leagues and so forth, you know. You talk about disruption of play. This is... You're losing more time on that than you are in the field.
Well, you're not losing time because the referee has basically set his watch to add to whatever time. So, technically, you are getting... If it's 2 minutes, you're getting that 2 minutes back anyway. I suppose maybe if one side is sort of, you know, capitalising, you know, and attacking, and then that 2 minutes has held them back or given an opportunity for the opposition's manager to talk and fix up the issues, that will evolve. And then, you know,
mm-hmm.
that will be, it's becoming part of the football. And so teams and clubs and managers and players will get used to the process and have tricks to deal with that. So I think I was definitely against something like VAR, but it, you know what? It adds to the tension. No one can deny that. And I think on Twitter or someone, who was it that sort of said, one of our ex-strikers who's playing at Rangers. Defoe, how can I not remember him? He was saying, what, removes tension. Now, here I was smashing, because he's watching the game, here I am smashing the couch, and now I'm, you know, he did a slide down his hallway. You know, so, look, it's here to stay, and it will get better.
Yeah, look, VAR is, the big thing is that it's meant to get the obvious mistakes that the umpires, the referees, I should say, don't pick up.
Yeah.
You know? So, you know, the critical offside that is so blatantly offside that, you know, the linesman, so, you know, miss it and so forth. That's the big thing, you know. However, you know, it's a game of millimetres. And there's going to be, you know, deflections. You know, was that the head or was the arm raised?
Yeah.
And when you think about, you get your head, you know, right on some, you know, your arm on, you know, as high as on someone's head. It's a bit like, you know, in the walls. You know, the natural thing to do is to put your hand up and deflect the ball so it doesn't hit your face.
Exactly.
You know. We just got to remember that's the main reason why we really want it, because there's been so many blatantly obvious bad calls. I mean, you know, Pedro Mendes, you know, without VAR, you were going to have another Pedro Mendes type sort of situation where the ball crosses the line.
Meters,
yeah. But that's the thing. You think to yourself, how do they get it wrong?
Oh,
but the fact is that you've got to help out these referees, and you know, the millimeters and stuff with all different camera angles, you know what, that's probably going to cause more or replace the barroom brawling and
you're really enjoying the barroom brawling. Yeah, I can see where you're going after this.
I mean, it doesn't, you know, there's a lot of people saying, oh, yeah, what are we going to do? Just be robots and say, this is a goal, this is not a goal, blah, blah, blah. It's not about that, you know. You can still debate whether that decision, I mean, that is still going to be a bone of contention amongst supporters in the pubs afterwards. For me, as I said, it's about getting those real simple ones, you know, the ones that are so blatantly obviously wrong, and correcting them. And I think nowadays that there is, you know, everything is reviewed, they're saying. whether it's, you know, like a, you know, a penalty shout or a or something where the umpire says, you know, not a, you know, get up, that's not, you went down too easily, you know. And in the next, in the next state of play, you know, you straighten the microphone, hey, you need to have a look at this, you know, blah, blah, blah. And you know what? And the thing is, you know, when Jesus, who took the goal, you know, sort of going up and having a go at Michael Oliver, Mr. Bean, I call him because of the way his mouth is. But you know, but you know, the referee just goes, mate.
Not me.
It's the voices in my head. He's pointing to the headpiece in the ear and saying,
go,
there are cameras there that's saying that you are wrong.
Yeah.
You've scored it, understand the emotion, but you got it wrong. And guess what? It's going to go against us, but on this occasion it didn't.
So what do you think the City player was telling the ref? Because really, it had nothing to do with him. You scored the goal, but you weren't the one that handballed it. What was he saying? You got to give me the goal.
I think
I'm a precious Brazilian.
Yeah. I think you start. This is the panic of it. This is what they're paid for, and you know they want to. They're winners. These guys, they just bounce from club to club and just go. You know, you won't see them at West Bromwich Albion, even if they can afford wages.
Why West Brom?
Well, I don't know. I just said that, but you know, because they've been relegated recently.
Evil.
Yeah. Look. They'll do everything they can to win. That's the way that they're bred. That's the way that that's the way it is on the streets. You fight for survival.
You're talking a lot of fighting, fighting on the streets. What's going on in
but
your
this
life?
But this is the background premise around their way of thinking, is that they need to do whatever they can to win. Yeah. And if that means that you've got to intimidate referees, you've got to feign injuries, that you've got to go down the box too easily, you know, but what we're saying now is, hey, every supporter laments how players go down too easily, that, you know, they dived and so forth. Well, now you're not going to get away with it. What I would like to see, however, as the technology gets better, is to start to have some retrospective penalties.
True.
Yeah.
That's an interesting point. Yeah. Retrospective penalties.
Well, I just don't think that the fact that you've got a yellow card for a dive, that, you know, that depending on, look, I don't know how, there needs to be a lot of thought put into this, but why, you know, there are some times where, you know, cards aren't given, whether it's a bad tackle in the box, outside the box, whatever it might be. I just think that, you know, if you've got the technology to say, hey, that should have been a red card instead of a yellow card, I don't care if he's played out the game. You know, if they're going to play like a certain way and, you know, and definitely, you know, throw some unnecessary caution to the wind in certain situations, then I would say that it's a bit like in every other sport, right? Here with the AFL, you know, we don't have a send-off or that sort of thing. But, you know, you're going to, if you strike somebody behind the play or anything like that, you're going to be outed for 2 or 3 weeks.
Yeah.
You know, I just think, you know, that there's a thing there, you know, oh, he's got a yellow card, it's dealt with. I think that's going to change in the next, you know, 5 to 10 years.
Okay.
Yeah, you heard it first. Am I getting a bit too philosophical here?
Oh, well, yeah. Well, we better let you have your say. You want to sort of start a brawl, obviously, today.
Well, if I had my say, I'd say that it's almost time to get out of here.
Good idea. You're off to a pub for some fighting.
Russell Crowe did it, fighting around the world. Is there anything else? Obviously, Newcastle. Let's just go through quickly your prediction now. You don't think they're going to win this one?
Here we go. Are we playing at home?
Yeah.
I will win 3-0.
You obviously don't believe in
here we go.
Look, I think that we have a real opportunity to go to town. This is a really terrible side.
Well, we had a terrible side in Villa and we only just beat them.
Yeah, yeah, but I think, you know, that we're a little bit more warmed up, you know. Did the stretches. Yeah, look, I'm going to put it out on a limb and say 5-0.
Oh, you use your limb, obviously. Yeah. Let's see, are you going to sort of say that in the pub or you just wait to start a brawl? Or?
Depends where the pub is. Okay. Any last minute sort of stuff?
No, I think we've spoken a lot. I don't know about the game, but we did.
So I think next week is going to be difficult for us because it's a Sunday night game. So unless you're prepared to watch it during work hours or something on your phone,
it's not going to happen, is it?
Yeah. So
we'll see how we go.
Yeah.
Well, look, it could be if there's a 20-minute highlight show, maybe.
Well, there'll be the mini match, so it's that's up
perhaps.
To you.
Perhaps. We'll see.
Thank you. Okay.
You never know.
Cool. All right, then. If there's nothing else?
No.
Come on, you Spurs.
Coys. Cool.